Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Odyssey State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
Well, we had some sunshine over the weekend that helped after the deep, deep freeze. It was still very cold, and at 22 right now, it's not exactly warm. However, we will go above freezing and on a gradual curve till we get to 43 on Friday. But in between, we are anticipating some snow squalls, including overnight into tomorrow, Paul. And looking around the country, everybody's looking for a little break. And California got one with some rain and some cooler temperatures to help with the fires that are still burning in some cases. But then that creates the possibility of mudslides.
Wow.
These people can't get a break.
And I see that you have Barry Pintar lined up to give us an update on the fires coming up a little bit later this morning.
Barry Pintar with KDKA-TV spent time in California reporting on the fires, so we have a direct and local connection. And we will talk to him in the next half hour about what he experienced firsthand. I mean, it's a lot different when you see some videos, some photographs, but when you're on site during an active fire like that, I'll be very interested in his, take on what he experienced.
Likewise.
That said, it's only January, so it's likely we will see some more snow, even though we basically have received as much snow so far as we did all of last winter. That said, the schools only have 5 flexible instruction days. I didn't know there was a limit.
I didn't either until this morning.
Yeah, State Department of Education policy limits the number of flexible instruction days when students stay home but attend classes via the internet. The total is 5, provided districts get state approval ahead of time. And then, I guess, extenuating circumstances, they may offer a couple others. And what that means is when you have reached so many days, you have to make them up because school has to be in session. I don't know the exact number. I think it's like 180 days. But anyway, so if you reach your maximum, then you have to extend school on the other end, which means on into June, which the kids hate to hear. So in some cases, they will be old-fashioned snow days, just like when we were kids. And you waited for that message. Did you have somebody on the radio in Montana that used to, like Jack Bogut here?
No, we went to school.
You didn't have snow days.
Right.
Really?
That's right. We went to school.
No matter what?
Right.
Wow.
Could be snowing. It could be 20 below zero. It could be whatever.
And you just went to school.
Right.
No flex days back then.
No. The only reason we wouldn't go to school would be because the building wasn't hot. They didn't have any heat. That would be a reason to not go to school.
And the other thing people are talking about and will be today is the Super Bowl is set. It'll be Kansas City again, going for 3 in a row, 4 out of 5 years against Philadelphia's Eagles in New Orleans 2 weeks from yesterday.
Wow.
On Super Bowl Sunday.
It's going to be super.
Well, it's basically what you thought would happen, even though I think a lot of people like me were kind of hoping the Bills would get in at very least. And Aaron, you wanted the Commanders to get in there. But obviously that didn't happen. When you turn the ball over 4 times and give up 28 points off of those turnovers, you're not going to win.
No.
In the National Football League. And turnovers really were the difference, along with what a lot of people are saying on social media, poor officiating in the Kansas City game on a couple of critical calls. But it is what it is, and already the experts are giving the Eagles a point and a half if you follow along at home.
Oh, really? I didn't.
On the line, yes. Yeah,
so I didn't think that would be the case.
Kansas City is favored by 1.5, but it's early. You got a couple of weeks to see. And, of course, the obligatory Taylor Swift shots were shown.
Yeah.
And she came down on the field.
There was a steamy kiss after the game.
Steamy kiss for Travis Kelce. God bless him. She gets, like, super treatment, right? Most people aren't allowed on the field unless you're players or staff or personnel until the Super Bowl. Then they let family member and friends come, as you can recall. So our last Super Bowl win was in Tampa. It's been a few semesters, right?
Yeah. I'm looking at a post here on X just minutes ago. Marty Griffin reposted a little video here from Philadelphia outside the stadium, apparently. And some Philadelphia fan is firing a gun in the crowd, firing a gun in the air. And I don't know that the people understand when they do that, that they're firing in the air. When that bullet comes down, it can kill.
It comes down somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's obviously a no-go.
Yeah.
But it's Philly again, and Philly's been there with the Chiefs. They've lost to the Chiefs, and we'll see what happens in New Orleans on Super Bowl Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people are talking about on this Monday. Us with you wherever you go. AUDACY will keep you posted on breaking news and weather information. Larry Richard with anchorman Paul Rasmussen. Over the weekend and yesterday morning in particular, Paul, there was a scare for people that like coffee because Colombia had refused the military aircraft bringing back Colombia nationals who were being deported. And then they worked the deal out. So Donald Trump was going to impose a tariff, which would have, they immediately said, most of the coffee beans come from Colombia, so your coffee would have went through the roof. But they worked out a deal at the last minute. So apparently that's not going to happen, the tariff part anyway.
So they're going to take their bad people back, and everybody's going to be okay with that.
Yeah, they have, I guess, they agreed to accept the deported immigrants back in Colombia. And with more details about what the president's done over the weekend, CBS's Jared Hill.
President Donald Trump, back in Florida for the first time since moving back into the White House, is preparing to host Republican House members for meetings at his Doral resort today. The focus, domestic policy, as an international showdown seems to have cooled. Overnight, the White House said the U.S. and Colombia had reached a trade war-ending agreement over deportations. Over the weekend, Colombia's President Gustavo Petro refused to accept U.S. military deportation flights, saying the U.S. cannot treat Colombian migrants as criminals. President Trump threatened a travel ban on top Colombian officials and 25% tariffs on Colombian exports, which would have doubled after a week. Petro initially stood his ground, announcing his own tariffs on U.S. goods, writing, "Your blockade does not scare me." But last night, the White House said Colombia's government has agreed to all of President Trump's terms, including the unrestricted acceptance of undocumented migrants from the U.S. without limitation or delay. This as the Trump administration ramps up deportations nationwide.
We are going to enforce immigration law. We're going to protect the American people.
Vice President J.D. Vance defended Trump's efforts on CBS News Face the Nation, including the president's executive action allowing agents to make arrests in churches and schools.
I desperately hope it has a chilling effect on illegal immigrants coming into our country.
According to ICE, hundreds of migrants have been arrested over the past few days, including nearly 1,000 on Sunday alone.
A Colombian delegation is set to travel to Washington for follow-up meetings this week. Meanwhile, Vice President Vance was also pressed on Face the Nation about Trump's promises to lower grocery prices, pointing to executive orders on oil drilling that he says would help. But he acknowledged it's going to take, quote, a bit of time.
CBS's Jared Hill. And to that point, egg prices have been one of the focuses.
Wow.
When it comes to food. And that has been largely impacted, and additionally by the bird flu. I saw videos over the weekends of birds. Now, I'm talking about not just birds and chickens. I'm talking about wild birds, dead birds all over this lake I saw photographs of. And, you know, food prices have gone up and they continue to go up, particularly on eggs. J.D. Vance said yesterday on Face the Nation that declaring a national energy emergency will help prices of food go down, too. So we'll see where it goes.
And I see you're going to talk with Michael Sherwin this morning in about a half an hour. He's a supply chain expert.
Yeah, from Duquesne University. And a lot of this has to do, and this is where Pittsburgh plays an incredible role, and that is with artificial intelligence. Speaking of which, Wednesday night, Heinz Hall, the speaker series with the University of Pittsburgh, is Oren Edizoni, who went to Carnegie Mellon University. He is considered to be one of the most intellectuals, anyway, familiar with artificial intelligence. So I think that'll be fascinating to hear. And I'm going to try to get him for us on the morning show to kind of talk us through, because people hear about this all the time and it's like, okay, well, what is it really? You know, I remember my father-in-law asking me, where's the internet? And I paused.
Right.
He goes, well, where is it? I go, where's that at? And I'm like, well, it's kind of everywhere because it's networked
computers. Think of it like electricity.
Well, yeah.
Right.
And actually, the internet was originally developed to help universities pass information and documents between schools. And then it became, obviously, what it is today and more.
Getting back to supply chain issues, which they say that supply chain issues are playing still a role, I guess, to some degree, in inflation. That these, you would think by now that those would have been, you know, the wrinkles would have been kind of ironed out of that problem after all these years.
Apparently not. I just think of there are some things that you can do virtually and some things that you can speed a process up because of that. But then there's like a letter. You still have to have somebody, unless you're sending a robot to everybody's house. You know, we talked to John Fedko about that, which was fascinating to me, that just a few years ago, John spent many years on television doing sports. He ends up being a walking mail carrier, walking an average of 12 miles a day down in New Kensington. And one of the things he said, which was obvious, but you didn't think about, was it's one of the few things where, you know, there has to be a physical delivery.
Yeah.
And when you say you put a letter, you're mailing into the mailbox, put the flag up, you assume it's going to get where it's supposed to go. And, you know, astronomically, it does. I mean, there's always a few exceptions. But that's pretty incredible. I don't know how you replace that unless you get robots to come to the house. That's all I need.
Wow. It's just hard to get my head around that idea.
Well, the Amazon, think of that. I should have invested in corrugated cardboard boxes.
Yeah.
Because who knew the proliferation of Amazon creating all these boxes?
I mean, they went from selling books on the internet to, they got their own fleet of airplanes. they're like right up there with Federal Express.
Well, Jeff Bezos, there's a famous photo of him, and he has like a piece of wood on two wooden horses, and it's his desk at home with a computer on it and a bunch of books around it. And he basically started all of this just doing that at home, selling books. Who knew? What's the next big thing? That's what I want to know. Let me know if you find out, Paul.
I'll clue you right in. Yeah.
This is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with anchorman Paul Rasmussen. And we are joined by KDK-TV's Barry Pintar, who spent time in California covering those incredible wildfires, unlike anything we've seen since maybe Hawaii the previous year. Barry, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. How are you?
Good. good. So you're from this area. You spent many years in the Los Angeles area working as well. What was it like to be on the ground with those fires active at the time you were there?
Yeah, you know, I've covered a lot of things in my career, as you have as well. We see a lot of things in what we do. I can tell you, I've never seen so much disheartening devastation that I saw there. It was, we use words like apocalyptic, but it really was that. You know, our first night there, we got off the plane, we went right to CBS headquarters, and then they suited us up with our fire gear, if you watch some of that stuff that I was wearing, and we went out to the Pacific Palisades area to start. I was not prepared for what I saw there. People, you know, again, when you're talking about a fire, a rapidly moving fire with wind gusts up to 100 miles an hour with no warning, people were abandoning their cars and running. And we went to one of these streets where there were just lines of abandoned cars. And Larry, I've never seen anything like it. The metal on these cars, because of the force of the fire, was melted and dripping down the road. And now keep in mind, of course, the power's out. So it's completely dark. All we have are the lights on our cameras or the lights on our car. Power lines. I just heard your traffic report about power lines down. Imagine power lines down everywhere. I mean, it was absolutely devastating, to the tune of, if you can imagine, you know, upwards near 50,000 acres, acre after acre, mile after mile of this. So yeah, it's pretty devastating.
Barry, you lived in the Los Angeles area for quite a few years. Describe for us, if you would please, how close did you live to any of these areas where there were one of the fires?
Yeah, so the two big fires were the Palisades Fire, which is down near the Malibu area, Brentwood, encroaching onto Beverly Hills, and then up in the Eaton Fire, which is Pasadena area, where the Rose Parade comes from. I lived right in that Pasadena area. As a matter of fact, I worked out at the Rose Bowl for years and years. There's a running track on the outside parking lot area. So we were absolutely in our neighborhood. And see, that's the difference. I've covered a lot of wildfires in California before, but they're out into the mountains and you have to drive a couple of hours to get them. That's what we're used to seeing on the news. What sets this apart is this was right in neighborhoods where people live that were totally devastating. So if I can draw a local parallel, if we saw in the news that, let's say up in Clarion County, which we both know, in Cook Forest, had a forest fire, we'd go, oh man, that's bad, that's terrible. Those firefighters, look, they have to go deep into the mountains to fight this forest fire. Now take that forest fire and put it into Wexford or Cranberry or the Strip District. That's the difference. We're talking about homes, businesses, churches, completely areas of human life living completely wiped out.
We're with KDKTV's Barry Pintar, who spent time in California recently to cover the fires. And for those that don't know, there are still active fires, including Palisades Fire, 90% containment, but 23,000 acres burned. And then there's the Eaton Fire, Hughes Fire, Border 2 Fire. I mean, there's just a continuation. Now they're getting some heavy rains, Barry, and as you know, they're worried about, on top of everything else, mudslides.
Yeah, exactly. So those heavy rains should move out later tonight in the Los Angeles area. But I'll tell you, at the end of the day, those rains are a blessing. But if I could talk for one moment about containment, because you brought up Palisades Fire is 90% contained. I think the Eaton Fire, 98% contained. Because we live in the area we live in, we don't really understand that word containment. People often think, for example, in the early days when I said there's 0% for 0% containment, 7% containment, that isn't the amount of fire that's out. If you think of the word container, where they have actually built away fire lines, or there's a natural barrier like a river. In other words, the fire can't go any further. So containment is not the percentage of flames that are still burning. It's where they've gotten it into the control, to the part where they can't go any further. So yes, the rains have significantly put out these fires. The containment is high, And now, again, with that rain, it's continuing as we speak. It looks like we're at the end of the act of fire, the devastation we saw. But, Larry, we're talking J.P. Morgan, for example, is saying $50 billion with a B in terms of damage. We're hearing, imagine living in Pittsburgh and you have a flood and you don't have insurance. You know, insurance companies are refusing to pay for these fires. These people have nowhere to go. They have no home. They have no even neighborhood, no neighbor to stay with. The neighbor's home is gone as well. So, yeah, we're now dealing with the mudslides, which are terrible. And we understand mudslides in Pittsburgh. But the fact that the fires are finally out, so highly contained, now it's just a devastating cleanup. And dare I say, bringing in the sniffing dogs to find the people that just didn't get out, because, you know, the death toll count, I think, is maybe 28 right now. But officials are first to say it's much higher than that because, you know, some people try to stick around and hose off their homes, and within seconds they could be faced with flames and, you know, devastation, loss of life.
Are there any plans, Barry, for you to return to Southern California?
Well, so we'll see what happens. At this point, again, it looks like things are under control now. You know, one of the great things about, you know, if I could just tout working for CBS and KDKA is because we're owned and operated by CBS and our management just so closely works together. I think you know the story. Within a day, I was on a plane and there and reporting on the ground. So short of some natural disaster happening, not at this point. Of course, they could send me back for some sort of follow-up. But again, the good news for at least those who live in those areas is high percentage containment, rain. It looks like things are under control. But just as we saw in Hawaii, as you mentioned, far from the end of the story.
Barry, appreciate your input. Thanks for spending some time with us this morning.
Always my pleasure, Larry.
KDK TV's Barry Pintar, who spent recently a lot of time covering those fires in Los Angeles.
I remember him mentioning before that it stuck with me that he had lived in that area, and I wanted to get a better idea just how close he was where his former residence was. So,
yeah, I think he did a great job of describing the enormity, because it's hard to get wrap your mind around it, you know, being here. We've never seen anything even close to that.
No.
I mean, we barely have a brush fire or two in a season, which typically is very small, and, you know, rarely is there associated loss of life, unlike this situation. So consider yourself fortunate. We dealt with some extreme cold, and now we're moving out of that. So we'll take a little sunshine today in 36. And his first sit-down interview on Face the Nation covered a lot of topics, and a lot of those of importance to a lot of people. He called Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth a disruptor to the norm. Also talked about capital investment and help lower prices. He alleges that FEMA has often been a disaster itself. Vance also said, on immigrant arrest near churches, schools, I desperately hope it has a chilling effect. A birthright citizenship, the dumbest immigration policy in the world. J.D. Vance said Trump was right to suspend refugee programs. And he talked about the pardons of the violent January 6th offenders. Quote, we're not saying that everybody did everything perfectly. And interestingly enough, he said and spoke about Silicon Valley's influence in government. We believe fundamentally that big tech does have too much power. So they could talk to the guys. They're around all the time, Elon Musk being one of them, Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, all these other people that have been closely associated. They talk to them about too much power and influence. We've seen Elon Musk, the richest man in the world, $439 billion as of this month, by far the richest man in the world. Interesting study on what he's done in his career so far. but he has major influence.
I mean, name an area of our economy that he doesn't have some impact in.
Crickets, right?
Right.
I mean,
he seems like a...
I think there was a point where people were saying, who's running... This is early on now. I think Trump addressed that. He said, who's running the country, Elon Musk or Donald Trump? Of course, Donald Trump stepped in very quickly. I'm the president, you know?
Yeah.
Make no mistake about it.
He seems omnipresent, Elon Musk does.
Yeah.
Seems to be not an area that he's not involved in right now. It's or at least it's a significant part of our economy and culture.
Well,
whether it's SpaceX or Tesla or his work in social media, owns X now, taking a very active role in artificial intelligence with the Grok application that you find on X. There's just hardly an area right now that I can't, communications, the economy, seems like has a presence just about everywhere.
Yeah, he's tweeted about a lot of different subjects. And I know coming up at the top of this hour, you're going to talk about TikTok, because a lot of people, 70 million Americans have the app on their phone. And so they're interested in keeping it going.
I thought it was 170.
Or 170.
Is it?
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't want to cheat 100 million people. Yeah, 170 million people.
Which is basically one in every two households then.
So, and you'll get into the details of that. We're also coming up right after the news at the top of the hour. We're going to talk about artificial intelligence and its changing supply chain. And you go, well, how? I think you'll be surprised how this works. And the fact that Pittsburgh is playing such a pivotal role in all of this. Meanwhile, one of the most, I guess, gut-wrenching at the same time, heartwarming things that I saw over the weekend were the return of some of the hostages that had been in the hands of Hamas to their families. And if you've seen some of these videos and pictures of them being reunited, you just can't imagine how the families are feeling that have had this opportunity, thinking that this day might never come. And it's tenuous, but CBS's Michael George.
The fragile ceasefire between Israel and Hamas is holding for now after both sides reached an agreement to release a civilian Israeli hostage who was supposed to be freed Saturday. Under the new deal, Israel started to allow Palestinians to return to northern Gaza this morning. That was supposed to start Saturday, but Israel put it on hold, accusing Hamas of violating the terms of the ceasefire. Thousands of Palestinians have been waiting there for days to go home. And the Israeli Prime Minister's office says Hamas will now hand over that civilian hostage, Arbel Yehud, along with soldier Agum Berger and an unidentified male hostage on Thursday. That's in addition to three other hostages to be released on Saturday. We're also learning new details about the four hostages released over the weekend and their time in captivity. Israeli media reports one was held alone in a tunnel for a long time. They survived on one pita bread a day and were forced to clean and cook for the terrorists and their families. President Trump, meanwhile, suggested that most of Gaza's population will be at least temporarily resettled in other Arab countries.
Take people, and I'd like Jordan to take people. You're talking about probably 1.5 million people, and we just clean out that whole thing.
Egypt, Jordan, and Palestinians all rejected that idea.
Michael George, CBS. The idea was to move people from Gaza temporarily to these surrounding countries, and they said, no, nope, they're not coming here. So, don't know what happens as they try to rebuild in that region. And if you've seen, there's not much left.
Right, there's pretty much a ground upper.
You know, which reminds me of scenes that you would see in history of the devastation, for instance, in World War II of cities, where you think, how in the world, where do you begin to put the pieces back together? Same thing with the fires in Los Angeles. You see whole towns wiped out, neighborhoods gone. Where do you begin to rebuild? even if you have insurance money or have the ability to rebuild your home, if you did, you might be the only one there for who knows how long. What is your property value then? You know, starting from scratch.
I'm really interested in the causes, the actual causes of these California fires. I think we're going to find out that at least one, if not a number of them, were deliberately set.
Well, they are having that conversation. Apparently, they are pretty good about piecing together the evidence. And that's part of what the discussion will be this week in California, is to show what they think started these fires, especially the ones, as Barry Pintar pointed out, from KDK-TV in residential areas, which does the most damage, obviously, to property. And who knows how many lives. Eventually, we'll find out, I guess. But if you were a person that started one of those fires, apparently they're going to find you.